You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters, and this week in partnership with Givaudan. In these podcasts, we explore a huge range of crucial issues and exciting developments in the food industry with brilliant guests drawn from all areas of expertise. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a TV presenter and writer specializing in food and science. The title of this podcast is Why You Need to Know More About Umami, the Fifth Taste. And this is a subject that I am particularly fascinated by. I'm joined by a panel of experts from Givaudan. We have Magdalena Olfovka, product manager for Savory, EAME.
Hello, Stefan.
Jean-Louis Thibaudeau, team leader, creation stroke principal flavorist, EAME.
Hello, Stefan.
And Nicole Olhaven, Senior Project Manager for Consumer Sensory Insights, EAME.
Hi, Steph.
Now, I'm sure that many of our listeners, because so many of them are in the food industry, they will have heard of the term umami. But let's dig a bit deeper. Can you explain for us, Magda, what is umami?
Yes, you're right, Stefan. So although it sounds exotic, most of the people have heard about it. Ask what it means exactly, it's not always for the people too easy to explain. So especially if we talk about the consumer, but this is pretty simple. So from the beginning, the unique taste of umami has been well known in the Asian cuisine for centuries. And it's coming from the ingredients and food processing methods that are traditionally used in that part of the world. This unique taste was defined in the beginning of 20th century by the Japanese chemist Kikunae Ikeda, who gave it name coming from the colloquial Japanese language, where uma means delicious and mi stands for taste. If you say that together, umami means delicious taste. And this is basically the only thing that you should remember from the consumer perspective. So it's easy. Now we know umami means delicious taste. And then if we go deeper into the history of umami, in 1985, there was a first international umami symposium organized in Hawaii. So not really Japan, but Hawaii. And it was exactly there where umami was recognized as the official scientific term to describe the specific taste of glutamates and nucleotides.
And it's really interesting, isn't it? When you're in Japan and you're eating something, people will often say umai, and which means delicious. So, Nicole, it's still a little bit confusing, isn't it? We don't really have, certainly in Great Britain, we don't have the lexicon to describe it. But can you give us a bit more background on umami?
Yeah, I can, actually. It's pretty much since the same time than what Magda just said, since about 1985, that umami has been known officially in the sensory world as one of the fifth basic tastes, together with sweet, sour, bitter, and salty. And I guess every one of us, we have heard about these four. But umami is still something we kind of like, we hear, we know a little bit, but we don't really understand. And I try to explain, like I would explain maybe to someone who has never experienced it by himself. Umami is actually enhancing flavor, and what it does, it's pretty easy to explain. You imagine you're taking a sip of water in your mouth, and suddenly that sip of water actually doesn't taste like just a plain sip of water. You have the impression that like you're having something much more full, much more rich, much more round in your mouth, almost like you magically turned a sip of water into a bouillon, a soup product. And that's what umami is doing, actually. So it's making your product much nicer, much richer. Generally, you could also say that umami brings savoriness into food. It elevates the natural profile. So it doesn't change the profile from chicken to beef. It actually just elevates the natural profile of a food product to a more complex and culinary level and makes it taste great. And this fact that it helps making product taste great is fantastic, and is also the reason why it is so important for the food industry. We know from various consumer research that we have run in our department that a great taste is the most important driver for consumers when they are buying a food product. And I guess we are all agreeing that we want products and food to taste great. So when we did an online study in 2018, for instance, we have seen actually that 87% of the consumers in Europe, Africa, and the Middle East are considering taste or also flavor as the most important driver when choosing a savory product. And in fact, only 79% consider health benefits as an important factor. So that speaks for itself. It's all about taste. And specifically, I think I would like to highlight that this is specifically true also for the younger generation of consumers, which are the millennials and even younger than millennials, the Generation Z consumers. They are showing a very high interest and above the average of the other or slightly older consumers in bold and intense flavors. They are almost craving for a taste explosion, you could also say. and also, I think what is important to keep in mind is that these generations, they generally would actually live a much more health-conscious lifestyle. So you would imagine that they put health above taste, but in fact, that's not true. They are really not willing to compromise on taste at all.
I'm really glad to hear.
Yeah, me too. In fact, I'm really a foodie, so I'm happy to hear that. Yeah. And we have seen that also earlier this year, where we in fact tested some of our umami solutions in the UK in a consumer test, and we were testing actually our solutions against pure MSG or products not pure MSG, of course, but products containing MSG, and we were a bit like afraid, like really hoping that our solutions would perform equally or even better compared to a taste impression that is so much engraved in consumers' brains. Mm. and in fact, we were really surprised seeing that specifically those solutions which were performing extremely high and well in the impact and the complexity were the ones which were specifically liked by the consumers, by the UK consumers.
And it is bizarre that it's so difficult to put words to describe it. And so some people think, well, if you can't describe it, is it really there? But the neural pathways which deliver this information to the brain have been mapped, and the action of the taste receptors has proved that it is a separate taste. And if you look at Japanese food, the basis of so many Japanese dishes is a stock called dashi, and that is basically full of various different ingredients which have huge amounts of naturally occurring glutamates. You were talking about using water as a water metaphor to describe the mouthfeel. I sometimes say, just think of Parmesan. Basically, Parmesan is pretty. You know, it's not really cheese you're grating on your pasta. It's pure umami.
it's more than just cheese, right?
Yeah, exactly. And rich hams and anyway. But so those are the products that have umami naturally. What products would you or dishes would you find umami? Does it occur naturally in all of them, or is it something that is generally added to food? Jean-Louis, can you fill us in on that?
It's both, basically. The Western kitchens have been very familiar with the taste sensations of umami-rich food for some time then. So we know of many food products naturally rich in umami. You mentioned Parmesan, which is extremely high in MSG, but also tomatoes, but also all other kinds of umami compounds you can find in mushrooms, you can find in chicken, in tuna. So it's even present in our mother's milk. So we are exposed to umami from a very young age and continue to seek out this taste sensation throughout our lives, basically. So in the industry, it is common for sure to use the ingredients MSG to create the umami flavor. MSG is an industrial form of glutamic acid. There are also other sources of umami use, like what we call ribonucleotides.
So, Nicole, how would you describe the taste of umami? I know some people have said, well, think about it as somewhere in between salt and sweet, but that doesn't quite crack it, does it?
No, and it's in fact actually quite a tricky question because umami, and I think we all heard it a little bit already by the comments we just made, umami is very complex. One of the classic references for umami is MSG, so the monosodium glutamate, but because this one produces really a very succulent and depth flavor when you are using it in your dishes, when you're cooking with it. But when you're actually tasting MSG or other ingredients like the ribonucleotides, you would definitely say that it's something of a little bit, it has a little bit of everything. It's a bit salt, it's a bit sweet, but it's also a bit acidic and mineral. So it would be unfair to say, in fact, that it's a combination of the four basic tastes, because umami is unique and it makes it so difficult to describe, and because it's somehow subtle, but not, it's, can be maybe best linked to, like what we said, like a chicken stock that you have cooked at home, that you were cooking for hours, maybe some cheese, mushroom, we heard it already. But it's really, really difficult. And from a sensory perspective, it's also very hard to describe umami with just a single descriptor. That's not possible. We actually need a large number of various descriptors to be able to describe this complex taste perception. And it goes from what we said, it goes from the salt, the acidity, the mineral elements, sometimes even up to the level of some mouse feel descriptors that are used to describe what umami does in a food product. And also, I think when talking about umami, and we have realized that also throughout last year when we did a massive study internally at Givaudan using our expert panels describing our umami solutions, we could not stop at that kind of like factual level. We also had to integrate more holistic descriptors, which were looking at how is the balance, the impact, the longevity of a product that contains umami compounds.
So there's a bit of poetry in there as well. I love this. I love the idea of that. There's a sort of because flavor and descriptions of flavor tend to be so technical. I love the idea that it's really hard to describe because you have to draw on so many other elements to be able to explain it.
Absolutely. I think it's absolutely this. And I think it's at the end, it's the full harmony and balance of all of these different elements which are making actually a product taste delicious. And if something goes out of control, then probably the result, even though it would still have umami, could also go outside of what you wanted to achieve. Yeah. So it's really about the balance of all of these different elements.
Okay, so Jean-Louis, you are the principal flavorist. This really is your department. What's the secret? Why does umami make things taste so good?
Umami is really, for me, part of the taste philosophy of how to bring deliciousness and balance to savory recipes. But umami does not stand on its own. It's basically the connecting dot. It interacts with many components of the food matrix. We mentioned the four other basic tastes, but it also allows an holistic eating experience, even linking it with the, let's say, other taste dimension, like the aroma, the smell of the product. The taste in mouth, but also to some extent, it links it even to the texture in relation to basically giving you, a very rich experience. So umami expands the richness perception from the beginning to the end of the consumption. So adding umami for me is like moving from two dimensions to three dimensions, basically. It adds volume to the eating experience and it brings a vibrant dimension.
So, Nicole, can you explain the difference between umami and MSG? Because I guess a producer could assume that you just chuck some MSG in and food is better. But it's not quite as simple as that, is it? And thank God it's not as simple as that.
No, but actually the answer to your question is pretty straightforward, I would say, because umami is not more than a description of a taste impression. It's like a name. It's like a name that we have given to describe this taste perception of a great or a delicious taste, in fact. Mm. Whereas MSG, in fact, is on the contrary, is not a name. MSG is an ingredient which is traditionally used for many years in the industry to deliver this taste impression. It's also used as one of the gold standards when you want to describe umami in a more tangible way or in a more scientific way. So it's kind of like used as the reference standard. But MSG alone is not the only ingredient. And Magda can tell us much more about different other ingredients that are also contributing to the perception of an umami taste impression.
So Magda, can you add anything to that?
So for several years now, we see the demand for products with clean label and natural ingredients rising. Our consumers are actively looking for products which are rich in taste from one hand and therefore umami, but without MSG on the other hand. So despite the fact that MSG is naturally occurring, our consumers are often feeling not very comfortable with it, because if you tell them the name is monosodium glutamate, it's something what they don't like. It describes something very unnatural. And for us in Givaudan, umami is more than MSG. What Nicole just mentioned, it's the scope is much, much broader. And what we are offering, what we are developing, these are tools that are taking care of the optimal balance between the functionality of MSG, not using MSG, of course, combined with the nucleotides and also all other taste components. There are many of them contributing to the umami angle, all to make the food products taste delicious, because that's what our consumer wants.
So Jean-Louis, let's move from talking about these about umami in the theoretical and get a bit more practical. How do Givaudan chefs work with umami when you're creating a new concept?
Yeah, indeed. As flavorists in Givaudan, we worked a lot with chefs, and we have a lot of chefs at Givaudan, and umami is indeed very important for them. So in their kitchens, they use many ingredients, like indeed fermented fish sauce, miso you mentioned, all kind of ingredients, soy sauce, shiitake, mushrooms, all those ingredients, indeed, they are used to them as they bring a lot of, ingredients such as amino acids. Among them is glutamic acid, and creating indeed this deep taste and harmony in the dish they cook. They also work on industrial product development, where usage of these ingredients mentioned before is very limited for many different reasons. For industrial products, we have to have versatile umami ingredients for many different savory applications, delivering the same great effect while watching requirements or limitation of particular technologies. The cost is a driver, or allergens needs to be avoided, so then you cannot use soy. Yeah? So here is your umami solutions coming in, and then chefs have the possibility to highlight the natural deliciousness of a meal and bring back the rich eating experience.
So Magda, in what products are umami tools usually used, and why? What are the advantages of it?
Okay, then let's start with the consumers. We are all consumers, and as consumers, we expect our food to taste great. And by the way, there is no culinary product without at least a touch of umami, or at least it shouldn't be the case. As already mentioned, there are different sources of umami which we are using in our home cooking, or the ingredients which are used by the chefs, and there is completely different approach needed in the industry. So for many years, the food industry was using MSG and nucleotides to create the great umami taste, and although these are fully natural, from the food regulation perspective, they are classified as food additives. They are flavor enhancers having in numbers, and this is not making our consumers very pleased. They don't want to have it. Therefore, we look at the umami sources that are allowing us clean label products while keeping the great taste. And our inspirations is coming from different sources. So for example, that's always nature. We look at nature, what is happening in nature, but also what is happening in the traditional culinary techniques. So we are constantly analyzing foods coming from the different sides of the world, different parts of the world. And also the same we do for the local cooking techniques. All that is to discover the new ingredients and profiles. Coming back to umami, there is no better source of inspiration for umami than Japanese cuisine. Stefan, you mentioned that in the beginning, and this is fully right. There you have the highest probability to discover new taste components, and this is what we are doing. And you have their unique food, which is not very popular in the rest of the world, but you have also unique processes. For example, fermentation, which is used very often in the Japanese cuisine. And the fermentation process, in combination with the right food ingredients, create miracles. And there we are coming. We are trying to understand it from the scientific point of view, what's happening there and what we can get out of that. For our solutions and also for our consumers. We work together with our chefs and scientists and flavorists to create new taste ingredients based on these discoveries around the world. And that makes Givaudan being able to deliver umami without reliance on MSG or nucleotides. And we have broad range of different solutions applicable across all savory products, what Jean-Louis also said. So starting with the culinary, where we are working on umami for soups and bouillons, but also for ready meals, and also for processed meat and meat analogs. And then depending on the expected declaration, which is super important for our consumers nowadays, we can offer flavors, but also organic suitable flavors or foodstuff solutions.
So I think it's really interesting that you mentioned meat analogs and that, you know, that there's a huge rise in plant-based food where those savory flavors might be a little bit harder to find. Now, in the light of the recent debates on healthier foods and the introduction of different traffic light systems across EAME, do you think that umami tools can be used to achieve better health ratings?
Yeah, for sure. To mention Nutri-Score or traffic lights, indeed, there is not real connections with umami because umami is not seen as an unhealthy ingredient. Yeah? But to improve the nutritional profile of the product, you need to reduce salt, you need to reduce sugar or fat, yeah, which ultimately makes the product less tasty. So we know from research that while consumers expect a healthy product, they do not want to compromise on taste. So although there is no direct link between umami and the Nutri-Score system, umami has a synergistic effect with salt. So it means then that we, with our umami tools, we can maintain a product's great taste while reducing other taste enhancers like salt, therefore making the product healthier.
So Magda, when it comes to changing consumer behavior in coronavirus times, do you see any impact on the umami business?
Yes, actually, that's a super valid point, and we definitely see an impact due to Corona, but we have also seen changes in the consumer expectation for a long time now, before Corona. So, for example, for many years, umami was a term used only by us in the food industry, in our conversations, in our development as Givaudan, and in conversation with our customers. This is changing. Consumers are becoming more familiar with the fifth taste, and what you can see on the consumer markets, there is big number and growing number of restaurants that are talking openly about umami. They are utilizing the umami term in their marketing, in their menus. The chefs are talking a lot about umami. The same is happening in parallel with the, for example, cooking books and also TV programs, TV cooking programs. So if you go to the nearest bookstore, you will see how many of them are either dedicated to umami or talking about umami very much. And this is then going down to the consumer product. So we see big number of consumer products that are utilizing umami in their marketing or imaginary. So, for example, you may have the umami term used in the name of the product, but also umami being the primary function of the product to be used by the consumer. So this is going closer and closer to the consumer, definitely. But we also see a clear change in conversations with our customers. So the discussion is not longer only about MSG replacement, as it used to be years ago, but more and more now we are discussing the deliciousness and the product premiumization, and this is coming as a clear need from our customers.
And Nicole, any other thoughts about impacts on the umami business?
We have actually seen also that consumers are more familiarized with the word or the term umami. We have also noticed that consumers are actually becoming much more ingredient attentive. And I think that's something that we could see as kind of a trend in the past 5 years, I would say, if we're comparing consumer data from 5 years ago to consumer data nowadays. Recent consumer data, we can see that particularly the younger consumers are actually much more paying attention to what they are eating and what ingredients the food products are containing. And that's something that we have noticed, and to the point that Magda said, already before the Corona crisis. So already before the Corona crisis, there were certain circumstances which had an influence on how umami, or then more to say MSG and these ingredients have been perceived by consumers. But nevertheless, we have run just obviously recently as a big extensive study to understand the impact of the coronavirus on changes in consumer behaviors, values, and consumers' expectations also. And we have noticed that there are some changes which will impact also the behavior of consumers in the future. So, for instance, people will for sure pay more attention to their health and nutrition as a way to take care of their immune system. That's one thing which we clearly spotted in the research we've done in correlation to the coronavirus. And therefore, we are clearly expecting more need for clean label products in the future. So that's very clear. But interestingly, we have also seen that consumers want to treat themselves even more. And I guess that's something really naturally for human beings. When you're in crisis mode, you are looking for something that gives you some comfort. Let it be emotional comfort. Let it be relief of stress, relief of anxiety, maybe even relief of boredom during the lockdown. Consumers were expecting from savory products, from food products, something that they could trust. They knew exactly what to get. And what you want, if you expecting something from a fruit product, and we know that consumers are always looking for great taste, that's what food product has to deliver on this element more than ever. And I guess this contrast is really like a dual need that ends in a dilemma for consumers. It's on the one hand, they are worried about their health and they want to have healthy solutions, but on the other hand, they are also wanting an indulgent product that gives them a little bit of an emotional comfort zone and hideaway.
So Jean-Louis, I mean, if we're looking at sort of a dynamic world of flavors and the developing understanding of umami, is this leading to innovation? What is the latest thing in the industry for umami flavors?
Yeah, indeed, we are constantly working internally and with external partners and on upgrades of our umami tools in order to meet our creation needs and to serve our customer with the best possible solution. So what we have is indeed a holistic approach towards flavor creation. So we mentioned before, umami is very complex. So that requires deliberate holistic approach considering all umami angles. So basically, it's about then going for what we called beyond umami. This is our, let's say, most innovative approach of this new range that we launched now, which goes towards basically a richness in the taste dimension, which goes beyond umami. And when we are, let's say, having this expertise of playing with all kind of synergistic tools in the field of taste, we are able indeed to create this very beyond umami approach. Yeah? But on top of that, for sure, we can still go to develop solutions which are straight for replacing MSG, or that are, let's say, replacing the combination of MSG and ribonucleotide, and even, let's say, some solutions that are yeast-free or that are solutions to replace yeast extracts. So we have a very large range in this field. Yeah.
So Magda, what can we expect in the umami world in the future?
Yeah, everything what we said just for now, it's not the end, definitely not the end. And our global science and technology department constantly works further and continues working on the new and more efficient tools, from one hand to meet the industry need, but from the other hand, meeting the consumer expectation for the great taste. So basically stay tuned and we will be coming back with more definitely.
You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast brought to you by Food Matters, and this week in partnership with Givaudan. You've heard from Magdalena Olfovka, Jean-Louis Thibaudeau, and Nicole Olhaven, and me, Stefan Gates. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from salmon farm sustainability to gut microbiome analysis. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatters.co.uk. Goodbye. You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.